Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast, where we talk about things after weird things called the After Things podcast.
I wonder how many people have just encountered the After Things podcast. They're like, what an odd name for a success podcast about being an entrepreneur creative.
But you're at the end of a thing. And so what do you do after your thing?
You think about the thing.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
The voices you hear. First was Brian Brushwood, co-host.
Hello. Ahoy.
The other, Bryce Castillo.
Hello. Hi, everybody.
Carry on.
So maybe we title After Thinks.
Oh, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah. Gentlemen, this is our first episode of the new year.
Happy New Year.
Hey, man. We did it.
Yay. So we've talked a bit more before about, like, it's always very topical about resolutions and what you're going to do and what you're going to do. And Brian started before the new year working out, and Brian is feeling pretty good there. And
I'm far from where I want to be, but this
Brian
is the weird...
Brian says he's ready for Mr. Olympia, even though he hasn't won universe yet, but he knows that's going to happen.
Schwarzenegger. But it's astonishing to me because 2 months ago I invested in a trainer, and healthy habits take a long time to start feeling good and to start providing their own benefit. And it's like, you know, the whole first month in November, I guess my job was to show up, and we did extremely light weights, and it was just all on form because everything about my form was awful. And it's just like, and you know, my trainer is very strict. Like, you know, it's like, no, I could tell you're starting to use your back there. I'm like, yeah, busted. But it didn't get productive until the second month. And now at the end of the second month, at the beginning of the year, is the first time that it's like, man, it feels good to be eating healthy now. And it takes a long time to get to that place. Mm-hmm. And now it's like when I wake up in the morning, all I can think of is that 90 minutes of flow state of being in the gym and just, you know, having that slightly altered consciousness where it's like you're just about, you know, the next rep or the next, you know, jog or whatever it is you're doing.
That actually reminds me of a Vice article that came out, I think, a couple of weeks ago. About one of their writers trying to do like an 80-day fitness regimen to get abs, and
right, it looks like it worked from the photo we're looking at.
Well, kind of. But the whole thing about it is like it was incredibly unsustainable. What he was doing was pushing himself far beyond what you're supposed to do properly, right? Like mm-hmm. the fitness advisor or instructor that he had was like, no, you need to work with long-term goals and make good habits instead of just crash dieting and overworking yourself.
Yeah.
But that's how you do how you see long-term progress is by making good habits gradually.
Throughout all of November, like I was fairly obstinate about giving lip service to logging all my food or whatever, because I knew I was eating garbage, and I knew in the evening it's like once you have one beer it's like who's counting, and all those, you know, those dark calories add up, and it took 2 months, and this is the first week that I'm in the groove of you know, acting healthy being its own reward. This is the first week 2 months in that finally I'm like, yeah, you know what, I'm honestly gonna log every single calorie, and I'm gonna create an honest picture. But I could not have gone to that straight from being doughy and slouchy 2 months ago. It took this ramping up process to train my brain to where going to the gym is like, my brain is now like a puppy getting excited, like, oh, you're going to get an endorphin rush. You're going to feel great all day. It's going to be great. And that does not happen overnight. And it's just, I'm beginning that warm glow phase, I guess, is where I'm at.
You know, there are a lot of different strategies. And, you know, when I went to go do my A&E series, I'd always like trained myself or whatever. And I, you know, at one point I did an experiment to like see how big I could get, like eating, doing like high weight, eating as much as I could. I got up to like 220 pounds or something. I looked like a linebacker, but it was a lot of fat, a lot of fat, but a lot of muscle. I mean, my strength went way up too, but I just, you know, but I just looked like, you know, I looked like one of my brother's teammates. It was a cool experience, you know, going from a guy that was in high school, you know, 170 pounds to put on 50 pounds and all of a sudden look ginormous. But I'm like, that's not really the look that I wanted. And then I had to do a pilot for another TV project and I had to lose that as fast as I could. And that was a very interesting experience. But when I went to go do the A&E show, I reached out to a trainer who I worked with, Chad Waterbury. Chad, I'd read his stuff online. Chad turned out he conveniently lived in Santa Monica, which was close. And I worked with him and he's brilliant. He actually just got his doctorate now. And his strategy was very different than anything I'd had before. And it was counterintuitive to some of the things I expected. But I only had 5 weeks. But what he did in 5 weeks was absolutely amazing. I'd never had that many gains before in my life. I went up like 2 shirt sizes in there. My waist stayed the same and whatnot. It was incredible, but it was a super crazy 6 days a week. Like, you know, it was a very, very insane sort of, he called it prison style. but my point being is that different trainers, different strategies. And I think one of the problems is there's a lot of people out there, a lot of bad advice. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of bad advice on stuff and people don't follow through, et cetera. When I've met with him again, cause I have another project I'm working for, and I have more time than I did before, but you know, my diet thing, I just said, just tell me what I need to eat. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to try to be creative. I'm not going to invent around it. I'm not going to be like, man, does this fit? Whatever, whatever. And that's been great. That was actually easy for me to adapt to be honest with you, because I'm like, well, this problem solved, you know, I know what to do now. When I went away, it was easy when I'm at home and I have access to everything. But man, when I went on vacation, I'm like, I know I'm going to go off. My plan is I'm going to go off diet. I'm going to go off diet on vacation. I'm not going to sit and try to rationalize or whatever. But I found out that I might want to eat something a little crazy. But then I'm like, yeah, but I'd rather kind of go back to my diet when I can. You know, I had like a cheat day yesterday and I'm like, yeah, but I went to go find myself making myself something to eat and I was making my meal plan. So,
yeah, that's one of my favorite experiences is setting up a situation at home for the diet where the easiest, most convenient food that will satiate and you know, give me that savory taste that I want happens to be a healthy thing that's on plan. And, you know, forgive me, this might make some people cringe, but like when I'm super hungry, I will just grab one of those Progresso Lights chicken suits. Pop chicken suit. I put on a chicken suit, a chicken soup, pop the top and just drink it room temperature, just straight from there. Uh-huh. And then the hunger goes away and I feel, you know, like I had savory and I got out of that. I dodged a bullet spending only 160 calories, you know, less.
Are you talking about
soda,
a soup or a broth?
No, actual soup. I'll drink the broth and then just sort of, you know, toss or shovel some of the noodles
hobo.
And stuff.
Yeah.
It's delightful. It's the best.
Before the podcast, like I didn't have time to, I had to do some phone calls. So I didn't have time to like make myself my breakfast with my proteins and my carbs, all that. So I got the Ninja Blender. I threw a banana in there, threw some pineapple, threw some ice, blended it up, poured it in a glass, drank that. You know, that was my, cause now I make sure I always have lots of fruits and stuff like that. And that's the trick is, I don't tell myself, I tell myself, now it's like a cheat day. I'm like, yeah, Sunday I can have whatever I want. Meantime, it's like just have the fruits, have that stuff there and ready. Just eat that first and then say, yeah, I can have whatever I want after it. But after I had that, I'm fine. I should have had some carbs and protein or something like that. And today's hard for me to make my workout work. But long story short is that you can make these changes. You can make these changes. Brian's seeing it. I'm seeing it. Bryce is super healthy and young. Who cares?
One attitude's not bad.
Yeah, I watched myself. I started like end of November, you know, and I watched it's been super erratic. I haven't been able to do the 5 straight weeks like I did before. I see the difference in my skin. I see the difference all over. I feel way, way, way better. And now I'm excited because I'm like, you know, I got back from vacation. I'm like, great, I can jump into this. I had a great 2 days of workouts. Then the flu hit me and I'm like,
Man, that is an earthquake. A sickness is an earthquake that can totally derail it. And travel is the most brutal for me. Yeah. I mean, it's like I had a show cancel and I don't think I've ever been so happy. Like I was just like, because I was just dreading thinking about how it was just going to make, you know, that next week just ruined.
Yeah, because, I mean, when I've been on the road with you, it's not that it's like, oh, Temptation. It's like, oh, this is, I know what I'm getting at Wendy's. Or,
right, correct. You know, like, or worse yet, you know, you're transferring in one, you know, one airport to another, and it's like, it's McDonald's. That's what you got. And, you know, yes, you could say, oh, you know, just take healthy snacks. Yeah, screw you. That's not going to happen. You know, the stress of traveling and all this stuff. Don't even sell that.
Yeah. The goal is that you, and for me, and again, I'd say for everybody, for me, what's been best is I established my baseline. My baseline for the last 2 months has been, I eat very healthy. The unhealthy meal is the exception instead of vice versa, you know. You know, today, again, I still, my Diet Coke consumption probably could be moderated. But, you know, today I was like, I used to, before the podcast, be in a hurry. I'd run across the street and grab donuts. Mm-hmm. You know, what was my solution today? Oh, no, I have a banana and, a cup of pineapple. That's what I had, you know. As soon as we're done here, I'm going to go do my workout. And then I'm going to go, I'll go back to, I like eating. I mean, like, I get to eat, you know, I'm not eating anything, you know, I get to have a protein, like a chicken or turkey or egg white. You know, I can have a carb, which could be rice or potatoes. And then I can have, you know, a fruit or veggie, you know, and it's like, you know, it's not that ridiculous. Well, I eat four times a day.
And the underlying theme here is something that you can extrapolate outside of healthy living. It's setting yourself up for success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? You build a structure around you where the easy, you know, water flows downhill. Right. And so it's like, yep, you current you can set a trap/gift to future you. Cause it's like, you know yourself, you know, when you're going to be weak, when you're going to want to just, you know, for me, it's right before bed. If I could, I would just eat a brick of cheese and go straight to bed. I just want that fatty, savory feeling. Sure. And so, you know, as a result, it's like, well, there'll be no cheese in this house. It simply won't be available. And what I will have is cans of tuna that will be close enough to get me through. It's like, yeah, throw some soy sauce in there. And again, you know, you're not going to say no because you're not an unending pit of you know, willpower. But instead, just figure out a way to get through those situations with the least amount of damage down the road.
You know, what's curious, though, is that, like, when I'm doing it the sloppy way, I'm the worst. You know, all like, yeah, Mike and Ike's, well, it's 400 calories and I'll do this, blah, blah, blah. Once I'm on my diet plan, like there are sitting on the counter right now, chocolate covered Oreos, right? I had a couple yesterday. It was cheat day. I had a couple. I won't touch those again until Sunday. I won't go near them. And there's all sorts of candy and stuff in here. I have not, other than when I'm like, I'm holiday vacationing, you know, or if I'm sick, I let myself eat whatever I want when I'm sick, just because you're just like, sorry, I feel something coming on. Let me go get an Oreo. no, but like I found, though, that the fact that it's like cheat day, go crazy, you're not telling yourself you can't have it. You're just delaying it until that point. It's been super easy for me not to. Like, I open up the cupboard, I'll see candy or whatever.
Best is when you do it long enough that your palate resets and you get genuinely excited about healthy options. Like today, as soon as I was done, my reward is after working out is because, you know, they say you want to have protein shortly after workout so you can rebuild those muscles. So I go to Chick-fil-A and get the char-grilled nuggets. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm sure if I had it side by side, the fried ones would taste better. But since I'm not doing that, since, you know, that's the choice I do, I don't notice. And it just seems so savory and delicious. And
Yeah, you can totally realign what your tastes are and whatever. And you know, how many times a day do you eat?
I skip breakfast usually, and so then I'll work out and then have a decent lunch, and then I'll have a dinner, and then usually there's like my third meal is kind of that late night snack jousting that I do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's where I take snacks and I put them on gerbils, and then they attack each other with them, and it's hilarious.
It's like, right. I'm four times a day. That's what I'm on the plan right now.
Yeah,
but are they smaller portions?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, no shakes for protein. Using straight meat for protein. That's been the shift. My trainer had put on before says it, because like the real food protein seems to have a better absorption rate, whatever. But
So on the flip side, you were mentioning that there's different takes all around, and obviously, you know, different things work for different people. I don't know if I got to mention, but I got to meet Ray Cronise, the guy who made, who helped Penn lose 100 pounds.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Cray Ray, as he's called on Penn Sunday School podcast. And to my delight, I didn't know who he was because I was meeting him and I only knew his name. But he was like, oh, hey, you're Brian Brushwood. We met once at Twit at the cottage years and years ago. And we talked about Twit or whatever. Then it came up that he's Ray Cronise. And I was like, whoa, you're Cray Ray. This is great. And so he has a very, very different take. Everything is plant-based. You don't have to do, you know, the business about eating protein. You know, he would reject saying that that, you know, there's plenty of protein in broccoli. Just eat lots of broccoli or whatever.
I would defer to Chad. Like, show me the research where you're showing the studies of athletes doing high amounts of muscle gain.
Right. Well, and that's correct. And that's the thing is most of the stuff. And I'm sure he would have an answer for all this. In fact, maybe we should try to get him on the show. He would probably Skype in. He would be fascinating to hear.
I'd rather try to get Chad.
Okay.
Because, like, I'd be like, well, I heard this, and I heard this, and the guy I trust said this, you know.
Let's just put the two of them in a pit.
They get their own ass up.
And I would say, like, yeah, he did great. Penn lost a lot of weight, but he looked like a guy lost a lot of weight and didn't have much muscle mass. That was the thing. That's my – and what worked for Penn, that's great. But I looked at this guy and go, like, this guy looks like he crash dieted and lost so much muscle too, though.
Well, and that's – I think they were talking about it on the New Year's episode of Penn Sunday School. They were saying that you know, step one is to lose the weight, and then start exercising again. You know, and I'll say, you know, going to all plant. I mean, I definitely lost like 15 pounds that way a couple of years ago, but I was very slight and did not have much muscle mass at all at the time, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing to figure out is, like, you know, and again, I'm not, let me recuse myself from any sort of expertise on this matter at all. Let me make that very, very clear. But in the research I've seen, it's like, yeah, you can, you know, when bodybuilders drop 30, 40 pounds after contests, it's because they're losing muscle mass too.
Right.
They're losing tremendous, and muscle mass goes fast, you know, and that's one of the things you can have happen. And that some of those diets, like, yeah, like, you're losing fat and muscle. And you see that some of those people, I can't speak to his guys, Ray Cray, whatever at all, but I've seen other people who've done this. My friends that go vegan, like, oh, I'm feeling great. I'm like, what's your bench? What do you squat? How's your strength right now?
Well, you know? And I think that's what's interesting about this version of the journey for me is I've never worried about what those numbers are. I've always thought, like, I self-identified as a slight and wafy individual. And so I always just tried to be slight and wafy. And now, you know, being over 40, it's like, well, let's go for muscle mass and let's see what that's like. And Bonnie was the first to notice, you know, actual gains. And I asked her, like, I'm like, oh, could I be a muscly guy? And Bonnie says, do you remember that line from Breakfast at Tiffany's where Audrey Hepburn says she thinks diamonds are gauche on anybody older or younger than 40. Like they're elegant on somebody older than 40, but they're just gauche on anybody younger than 40. She goes, I think I feel that way about muscles, where it's like, like, being swole is gauche for anybody in their 20s.
That's
a Bonnie thing, right? Yeah.
Well,
so
other than when I did my one experiment before, I said when I mass ate and I said, wow, I put on a lot of mass here, but, like, how much muscle, whatever. And I still had that sort of question. And then when I did my workout with Chad and I watched in 5 weeks, and I had people like, are you just doing the juice? I'm like, no, you know, and you're like, holy crap. I didn't know what I was capable of. But then you meet my brother, you know, 6'2", my height, played, you know, was a defensive lineman in Auburn, SWAT team. You see this guy, you're like, all right, there's genetics there that maybe I have too. And then I got the DNA thing. I find out, like, I have the right DNA for muscle gain. I thought for most of my young life that I was a hard gainer.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was I wasn't eating. That was my problem, is I didn't eat. And you can work out all you want, but if you're not eating, you're not gaining. And you can think, oh, I'm a hard gainer. Like, no, you're just not eating. So, like, in your case, like, yeah, you don't know. Brian, we don't know what genes are at play here. We have no idea what we could be tapping into right now.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really enjoying the gamified aspect of, like, this is the first time I've ever – cared about like what my max is on you know, muscly type things. And and you know, the goal is always to get to 10, and if I can make it to 12 or 15, the answer is like, well, you know what that means? It's time to up the weight. And over the last 2 months, I mean, it's some of the numbers have doubled as far as things that I could not do. And now she just keeps adding weight, and it's really a fascinating challenge now that I'm really engaged with.
So it's a great point to be doing at this point.
In terms of like tracking, because you mentioned you're tracking your calorie intake.
Mm-hmm.
Are you also keeping track of your weight performance?
Yeah, but that's the nice thing about having a trainer. And now I'm running, like I bought a whole bunch of sessions, like 3 a week, and I'm running at the end of that. And so now I've got to really decide, like, well, it's expensive to have a trainer, but, you know, also it's kind of fun to keep climbing up this ladder. So I may do a reduced schedule or something, but it's like she's got all those numbers. In fact, when we finish the end of this first 3 month run, she's going to have me redo all the initial assessment exercises. And man, like that early focus on form made such an amazing difference. Like it changed everything about not only how much I could do, but the way you're planted, the stability, you can feel when the right muscles are being worked and so on. It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. We'll talk offline and about where you want to go with that too, because I got some people you might want to talk to. Mm. It's a research project, new serum, you know, looking for some volunteers.
A guy named Howard Stark.
Anyhow, you know, so one of the things that I need to have a goal. And that's the hard part, because I have a friend who's going through, I had to meet with the trainer and all this sort of stuff. And I said, well, for me to have it be open-ended is hard. It's really, really hard. Like I can like, part of the reason I'm able to do my diet and be able to do this without a problem is like, I know I've got a timeline that I need to have, be able to do this by this period. I need to have this happen. And one of the most dangerous things I ever learned was I saw how quickly I could get in shape in 5 weeks by going like super, super crazy. Mm-hmm. And that gave me bad habits, because I'm like, well, I saw how quickly I got in shape. And so that meant that I got out of shape faster.
That is the exact same thing that happened to me in the fall of 2015, was when I had done 6 weeks of the plant-based diet and I dropped 15 pounds. And I was like, oh, yeah, so at any time you could just press a 6 week get thin button. And so, you know, I got super doughy over the next 20 months or so.
Yeah, the problem that happens then is that, like, I did a – back in April or May, my birthday was coming up in May. I'm like, oh, let me drop some weight. So I dropped – like 10 or 12 pounds, just doing my own thing. Like, and I mean, I joke, like I go to McDonald's and lose weight, you know, as I know what to eat and what not to eat. And I got down to like, I was at like 192, 184, and I got down to 182, 181. And I was kind of close enough where I'm like, do I want to push to 170 or whatever? I'm like, I'm okay. You know, I did enough. And I'm like, let me just go, let's see how much I can eat. And then I went back and I ate like crazy. And I put that back up on a vengeance. And then also like, reprogram my body to like what I did before wouldn't work the same way. You know, that's the danger, you know, now.
Well, good. Well, we'll talk about getting, swole offline.
So
what about you? We got on this whole jag because of resolutions. Have you thought through kind of your goals and what you're targeting?
You know, I thought about this. It's not so much like I know what I'm targeting, and I might be able to, a few weeks, I might be able to talk more about some of that. I'm very happy with where writing is going right now. Very, very happy with the writing's going, in that I know what my work is that I need to do. The Naturalist has been a wonderful, wonderful success for me so far. I've got a lot of excitement about another book project I'm working on. I think I'm going to be able to announce that I'm doing two more books for the Naturalist series. So we have, the next one comes out in March. There are two more books that are coming out. So Naturalist books will be coming out into, you know, all the way into 2019.
Nice.
They're doing a promo right now, the Naturalist, by the way. You can get it for $1.99. It's back in the top 100 on Amazon. So,
oh, right on.
You know,
wow.
Top 10 sci-fi. So I'm happy with that. So I picked up a new project. There's been software stuff, which I'm always working on for fun, but I picked up a new big ambitious, if they go for this will be a really, really cool project. So hopefully I'll be able to talk about that in a couple of weeks. But also I thought about this, you know, there's the things you choose to do, but just as important as the way you choose to do it. And I thought, you know, what am I going to do differently this year? What am I going to do differently this year? And I thought that maybe I need to make a resolution about that, about not just, oh, I'm going to go shoot for this, work towards that, but do I need to try to become more of a morning person? Is that what I need to be able to do to get more done in the morning? Should that be my resolution? You know, how am I going to go different? I'm going to be much more proactive about certain things, handling more deals on my own. That's a thought, is like the way you do stuff. What are you going to change the way you do things now?
I think it's a good habit to just shake stuff up from time to time. And this is going to sound like a very trivial example, but it actually had reasonably profound ripples. I might have told the story before, but I was reading a book 15 years ago called The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing, and by Al and Laura Rees. And at one point, and you can nitpick with the details of this statement, but I think the spirit of it stands, they casually just say, yes, even though every blind test proves that Pepsi is superior to Coke, you know, Coke wins because it has better marketing. And I, at this time, this is back when I cared about, I'm a Coke guy. Pepsi sucks. Everyone knows Pepsi sucks. And just reading that caused me to wonder, like, well, why do I quote unquote know that Coke is better than Pepsi? And then as an experiment, I was like, you know, am I capable of just flipping a switch? Is this habit am I faking myself out? So I just decided, it's all the same brown colored poison. I'm just going to decide now, even though I hate Pepsi, I'm just going to decide to flip to Pepsi. It took like 20 minutes. 20 minutes, but it genuinely became my preferred favorite because I had contextualized it in such a way that every time I drank Pepsi, it was an affirmation of the fact that I am not subject to the whims of marketing devices. I am an independent person who decided to do something different or whatever. Yeah. And that has stuck with me, that tiny experiment. And that flexibility has been wonderful because now I'm not that guy that, you know, goes all Andy Rooney the moment somebody says, Pepsi okay? You know, and you decide that's the hill you're going to die on. But more importantly, in a million other little things, I just think, you know, I can adapt to whatever this is. I can decide to like this thing a lot, this healthy habit, this good idea or whatever.
Or at the very least, if you switched and you hated it, then you would know that you had a concrete reason to dislike it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the act of doing the experiment validated itself.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a very healthy sort of attitude of that. They are completely wrong, though, in the test where you do the full – we talked about that. The full can test, Coke wins. They're completely wrong
correct,
on that.
Correct, but the first sip, yeah, correct. Yeah.
Yes, I know your point, but I'm just like – I get hung up there like, oh, it's all just marketing. No, marketing takes you so far. Then there's but to your master point, master point, you know, I because it's just like, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not like, I'm like, ah, oh, we have, you know, people like, oh, we have Pepsi. I'm like, fine. Fine. You know, I'm like, yeah, like it's a goddamn soda. You know, it's like, it's a, do I want that to be and you know,
put that on your tombstone. Here lies Andrew Main. He really preferred Coke.
Pepsi is not okay.
I'm the person that, you know, people, oh, you can't tell the difference. I'm like, really? It's like all wine tastes the same. You know, it's like, you know, to some people. But anyhow, my point is most people don't care. I'm like, most people don't care. But it's one of those things. It's one of those things. If you have that percentage choice for a lot of things, there is a difference. And then you know that the difference is profound to you, but not to other people. And ultimately, who effing cares? It's sugar water. To your point, when I went to Shanghai, I said, you know what? My problem is I don't want to become a cartoon version of myself as I get older, where I'm even more picky or I'm even more this. I want to become less. There are many things I eat now that I didn't eat before because I said, you know, I used to not even like to eat chicken, you know, and then now I'm like eating chicken all the time and, you know, preparing it for myself, whatever. I'm still kind of funky about some of the ways it's prepared, but I'm like, I don't want to become this absurd version. I have a friend who is a great friend. They are so GD picky to go eat with. It drives me nuts. And I'm like, man, I know I've been like that to other people. I know that I'm like that, but I'm like, really, hang out with this guy and you realize I'm not that bad. But the point is like, I don't want to be like that. And I'm trying to be less and less and less. And I'm also like, I'm at the point now, like I had some, you know, got served, went to like Sizzler or whatever, and the steak was just not good. And the person I was with, their steak wasn't very good. I'm like, mine was better. I'm like, here, eat mine. Like, what are you gonna like? Eat yours. Like, but it's not good. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care.
Right.
Like, we can send it back. Like, I'm going to eat this, you know, in 2 minutes, it'll be done. That problem will be solved and I'm going to move on to whatever else, you know. And that's it's that you can get hung up on these little things and then you're not. And sometimes we want to get hung up on the little things because we don't have to worry about the more important things.
Yes. And now, everything you're saying is true. However, I swear I will cut someone if they put mayonnaise on my number six at Wendy's. I swear. I swear to God.
I mean, it's certainly okay to be grossed out by certain things. Like, I don't sure. I don't like mushrooms. But, yeah. I think, at the end of the day, I'm trying to be less about
you know, and it's like it's kind of the difference between, like, okay, your steak was not great, but it's still a steak. You can eat a steak. Where if you – there are just certain things that are, like, actually, like, create a physical response. Like, I don't like mushrooms very much or finely shredded lettuce. And when I have that, I can feel it, and it, like, it makes me gag just because I don't particularly like that.
Yeah. But I've been around the last few years of my life, I've been around some people who are so GD picky that you can spend 3 hours trying to get a meal and you don't get stuff done, that I'm just like, I'm not going to be that person anymore. You know, and sometimes some people, it's control. They feel complete lack of control. And I understand what you're saying, Bryce. Like, I hate mushrooms too. But there's some people, like, that's the one thing they can have, like, no, I can't eat here, can't eat here, can't eat here. And it's like, I do not want to hang out with this person. You know, and there are actually people I don't know if I hang out with as much anymore, because it's like, it becomes about them in the meal show, the what I can and cannot eat thing. And you're like, oh, but anyhow, that's been a big thing for me the last several years is to hear. And my family's surprised because they know I was so picky. And now we'll eat, like, is this okay? I'm like, yeah, I'll be fine. We're going to go to this restaurant. I'm like, listen, if I can find anything that's not fish, I'll be fine. If it is fish, I'll figure out a way to eat it. And I'm just going to shut up, yeah. You know, because the book I've been reading right now, which was very, very relevant. I think I mentioned it before, but I finally sat down to start reading it. The Arnold Schwarzenegger biography,
mm-hmm.
Total Recall. Have you listened to this?
No, it's a
autobiography. Starts with him as a child, goes through very, very detailed. It's like 23 hours. He reads the first section from up until, like, when he's like a kid. And then Stephen Lang reads the rest of it. And, you know, you realize that this guy, certainly we can, he's a complicated guy. We'll put it that way. But it gets into things like, you know, he was a millionaire before he even did Conan. You know, he about his taking, parlaying his money into his brick lane business, using the money from the brick lane business to get into real estate, getting into that, and how much. And then there's some brilliant takeaways in there. One of the things he talked about was, like, you know, the accent. And he started working with a voice coach about trying to lose the accent. And the voice coach, like, you don't need to lose the accent. We just need to make you more understandable. Mm-hmm. And part of the observation was that the more talk shows he went on, Merv Griffith, all these other shows, and people heard Arnold, you got used to the way Arnold spoke. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it wasn't an accent. It was how Arnold talked.
Right.
And that became a trademark, you know. And you think about, like, how that was one – if he had lost the accent entirely – he may have been a little bit less iconic. And that was a very interesting thing about the idea of people getting so used to Arnold.
Not just his accent, but even his name, right? Originally, they were going to make him, what, Arnold Strong or Stong or something like
Hercules
that?
Hercules Goes to New York, there, Arnold Strong.
Wasn't it called Hercules Goes Bananas originally?
And then retitled they, it after that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they dubbed in his voice. He's like, I'm tired of the same battles, yeah. The same bad guys.
It was, you know, there was this, you know, people like, can't even pronounce his name and how are you going to do this? But then he was very adamant about certain things. And now it's like, oh yeah, that the weird name was cool. You know, the accent, the Arnold way of talking, and it was that it became that a hook. You know, we've talked, there's visual hooks. You're like, oh, I'm going to wear a hat. I'm going to paint my face like, but also this way of talking that you hear that voice like, oh, it's Arnold. It's Arnold. Oh, you know Arnold? Oh, yeah, it's clearly. If you can very easily be parodied, it's kind of a good thing because it means your character stands out so much that people immediately know who you are.
Right. And so. It's one of those things, like, it's a stumbling block to learn to say Schwarzenegger, but once you get it down, it's fun to say.
Yeah.
And it becomes easy to stick in your mind. Very sticky.
Yeah. I'm at the point now where he's getting ready to shoot Conan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been in training forever for doing Conan. He's already been dating Maria Shriver, talking about his great observation about like going to like the hanging out with the Kennedys in their, you know, the compound and what like this. And, you know, Maria's like, well, you know, what do you think or whatever? He says, well, he has, you know, I like everybody, like, you know, if I ask everybody what their favorite color is, everybody says blue. It's all the same color. Politically, ask your political point of view. You all have the same political point of view. Everybody thinks the same thing on these regards, which is just sort of interesting, his insights. And he's got amazing stories. He talks about, like, because he was such an interesting personality, people wanted to introduce him and meet him, introduce him to other people, and he got to hang out with people. He got invited to you go to this famous restaurant called Elaine's Restaurant with Elaine. And she would take him around and take him to table to table. This is Arnold. You have to meet Arnold. Lucille Ball loved him. You know, Lucille Ball had him on a TV movie she did. He goes to a party and he gets introduced to Andy Warhol. And Andy Warhol is there with his camera taking photos. And then Arnold sort of just hanging around. And Andy Warhol says, oh, you know, like everybody's starting to leave. And Andy Warhol says, no, Arnold, why don't you stay? You know, why want you to see something? And Arnold says, a bunch of these young guys come in and they start taking off all their clothes and they lay on the floor. And Andy Warhol starts to organize them into different heaps and mounds and take photos like he's trying to create a landscape out of human asses. You know? And he's like, and it was like, because it was amazing to watch him work. And he started explaining to me, he says, Andy Warhol's like, I don't want people to understand how I made the photo. I want them to look at it and go, how did he make this? You know? And he goes, if I'd asked him if I could have watched him work, he probably never would have let me done this. But here I am watching, you know, Warhol work. You know, the landscape painter, Andrew Wyeth, right?
No, but I'll take your word for it.
If you look at Andrew Wyeth, iconic, one of the most amazing landscape, you know, artists, you know, ever. And so his stuff has been just celebrated widely. Okay. His son was doing a portrait of Arnold. And so he says, oh, why don't you come hang out with the family? You know, get to meet the family. So he gets to go meet the family, and his son, Jamie Wyeth was the artist. He goes visit, you know, Jamie Wyeth, and then Andy Wyeth's like, oh, why don't you come with, he did the famous, you know, he did portraits of Warhol, Jamie Wyeth, the portraits of Warhol and JFK, et cetera. He says, oh, why don't you come, you know, meet the family? So Arnold goes and meets a family, and then Andy Wyeth is there. Andrew Wyeth, they're like, oh, hi, Arnold, nice to meet you. Do you want to come with me? Yeah, I'm going to go do a landscape. He's like, okay. Gets in this car, this fancy, weird sort of car, starts driving over hill, through farm, through across fields, off-roading, whatever, and they come to this hilltop, and there's a woman there naked under a blanket, and Wyeth starts to paint her. And Arnold didn't know what was going on, but Arnold sort of describing some of the was describing, you know, the painting technique, all this. It turned out years later became a big reveal. This was Wyeth's secret muse. This woman was this farmer's wife or whatever they used to paint. And Arnold got invited into this world, met this, you know, like 2 decades before anybody even knew what was going on about this. Then it became a big, huge story about this woman. And it was just, he gets Zelig, like he gets pulled into, you know, these different sort of things. And this is before Conan. This is while he's done Pumping Iron and he's famous.
Mr. Universe at this point, right?
Yeah, Mr. Olympia. He's won Mr. Universe and Mr. Olympia multiple times. And so people knew who he was. He was on TV and talk show host, but he's just interesting and he's learning. He's learning from all these different people. And it's just very, very interesting. So
right on.
Highly recommend it.
Hey, you wanna slide into picks? I wanna thank you for a pick you turned me on to.
Yeah, sure.
Stealing Fire. I just finished. Is it Stealing Fire? Yeah. Silicon Valley Navy SEALs and teams work. Was this from you or did I get it from somewhere else? Nope, fantastic. Man, I wonder who I heard it from that got me to read this. Stephen Kotler and Jamie Wheel, Wheal. The book's called Stealing Fire, and it talks about how SEAL Team 6 operates, and they hit this ability to flip a switch and go completely into group flow where essentially there is no leader. They move. They have these heuristics that they use, like the person who's in charge is the person who knows what needs to be done next. And then your job is to do the job that's not being done by the other side, because, you know, you can't talk to each other. You can't set all this stuff up when you're sweeping a house and you only have, you know, precious 15 seconds to swoop in and capture the bad guy alive for this particular mission.
Yeah.
And so they talk about how they condition people, how they drill that in, and then they go into talking about various altered states of consciousness. And they eventually settle on non-normal states of consciousness as a catch-all, because altered states of consciousness can be anything from when you go skydiving, you know, you're very, you know, time slows down, you're thinking about a million things, when you're wingsuiting, when you're at a concert listening to EDM, you know, those rhythms are that speed for a reason, because it creates this group's ecstasis. And and then, you know, there's also you know, Silicon Valley CEOs that are microdosing with hallucinogens and so on. And it makes a fairly compelling case of, in general, any form of altered consciousness has there are some creative benefits, there are some flow benefits, but for me, reading this book and realizing that, you know, when I'm deciding to not be healthy, it's easy to say, yeah, I'm bored, let me open a beer. Now I'm less bored and everything's the same, but I'm less bored. But reading the way this book equates everything from extreme sports to hallucinogens, and just say all anybody is doing is chasing flow. They're trying to get out of their head for just some brief moment. And once I started thinking about it that way, it instilled this trigger in me when I have that, oh, I'm bored, you know, now's the time that I grab a beer. It's like, no, I'm bored, I want to get into a flow state. And so it's like, well, we need to organize that that pantry, because we got that mouse problem. And then, you know, 3 hours vanished, and I had a very delightful Zen experience of completely removing everything out of the pantry and completely organizing it very precisely. And I realized that I was making very healthy decisions by trying to chase the same, you know, echoes of a similar altered state of consciousness or non-normal state of consciousness. I really enjoyed it. The whole book, man, if there's one thesis, it's like, that book wants you to get messed up. Like, all it does is has case study after case study of amazing things that have happened after people have altered their consciousness. And so I'm not going to take it as gospel or anything, but I thought I had some really interesting takes on there.
Cool. I got a pick.
Yeah.
It is something that I've seen a million times, a billion times, but I showed it to the family over the holiday break.
Keyboard Cat.
No. No, it was Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
It had been a while since I had watched it all again, and it was a comedy, so I felt fine putting it on with the family around. And it was something that we ended up, like, all binging together over the holiday break. And it's every time you go and watch it, you realize how intricate and how dense it is, and how many just little jokes that they're totally okay with you missing are in there. All the self-referential stuff. It's really fantastic. And they're supposed to have a new season come out this year, which is really exciting, because I don't know. I'm one of the people who really dug the new season 4 that Netflix produced.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought structurally they shot for the sun, and then they were like, well, let's do something a little more down to earth. Because the original idea was that you could experience the whole thing like a nonlinear playlist, and they didn't quite get there.
You probably could have, but you would never do that.
Right.
And I think its biggest weakness on that season is just, like, literally not setting up what the big reveal of that season is, of like, no, we're actually saying this is the thing that they're going to have to deal with next season, and this is, we've just given everyone really good motive and opportunity to do X. And that said, I'm still excited for it, and it wasn't until, like, I was looking it up again that I realized that was Netflix's first comedy program.
Oh, wow.
You know, that was one of their early acquisitions and one of their first early original productions. But, you know, after House of Cards and Lilyhammer, you had Arrested Development.
Wow.
I mean, I guess unless there was actual stand-up comedy beforehand, but a lot of that stuff was licensed anyway. I don't know. It's fun, and it's really dense, and it's the sort of thing that you can just keep watching over and over again, because it's full of jokes, and it doesn't care if you don't get them. So that's Arrested Development.
I'm gonna double back down on what my pick was. The official title is Total Recall: My Unbelievably True Life Story About Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the reason I bring this up is because I think some of the most successful people in life have traits that I do not have. And it's very clear watching his entrepreneurship, the same that like Elon Musk had, the same sort of like step one is create a business, do something to make money to succeed, you know. And, you know, Elon Musk did that when he was in college. Like, he and his friends would like throw throw parties in their house and make money doing that. Mm-hmm. And then looking for opportunities. And at some point you're like, both of them, there's a period of time, a critical point where they were doing manual labor. You know, Elon Musk was shoveling coal, you know, when he wanted to come to the United States, did that. You know, Arnold's laying bricks, you know, and it's this sort of like, yeah, it's because it pays, gets things done, and you can sit around and be a passive person and wait for a better opportunity to be like, well, until that happens, let me go do this. So very, very much enjoyed it.
So, all right, so I just bought it on Audible.
Cool.
So there you go, gentlemen. Resolved.
I feel healthier listening to this episode.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. 2018. We're all going to be buff.
I'm stoked. Like right now I got to go for a little, do 20 minutes of cardio and then eat and then work out. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I enjoy my diet plan. You know, sometimes I like some variety, but it's fun.
Yeah. Right on.
Cool. Great. You all have a great day.
Is that how we wrap up the show?
And after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.